Welcome to the Creative Condition Podcast, an ongoing series of conversations and considerations to help people understand and embrace their own unique creativity for fulfilling lives and brilliant careers. My name is Ben Tallon. I'm an illustrator and author, and I bring 16 years of creative industry experience working with the New York Times, The Guardian, the Premier League, and more. And I invite designers, artists, psychologists, scientists, coaches, athletes, sensitivity experts, and all kinds of thought leaders to help us broaden our knowledge of creativity. Creativity is a fundamental pillar of human happiness, a vital ingredient in the solutions to our problems, but so often misunderstood. The show is supported by founding sponsor and B Corp, Illustration X. Take a look at their stunning range of illustrators and animators at illustrationx.com. If you like the music for the show, it's by Dirty Freud, who you can listen to now on Spotify and all good music streaming services. Today, following a nursery run incident, I'm considering risk. Risk in the creative process, risk in our broader lives, and what value does it have to the human experience and growing? This is The Creative Condition. Hello and welcome to the show. My name is Ben Tallon. This is The Creative Condition Podcast. How are you doing, guys? I hope you're well. What does your week look like? Busy? I've seen a lot of chatter this week on social media about freelancing, about it being a rough ride at the moment. And I don't know how you're finding it, but personally, very up and down, very tumultuous. And this is not, you know, I'm not talking about this week and having a knee jerk. I'm talking about years, maybe 2 to 3 years for me, have been noticeably bumpy. I'm talking about a lot of ghosting, a lot of last minute pulls on projects to the point where, you know, fees are agreed and the job is an awesome fit and everyone's happy and we're all raring to move forward. And it's gone. It just disappears. And there's a pattern to this. What'll happen is the conversation is vibrant, everyone's excited, and then tumbleweed, and your instincts kick in, and you know what's happening, and yet you go back, and let me know if you need anything else, just checking if this one's still going on, you know, I've got some good plans this end, and you try to be enthused, and you try to push the issue, and you hope that it's still there, but deep down, I think you know, you feel the disconnect. I am a big believer in the kind of connected psychology and energy in the atmosphere or whatever you want to call it. So I think when we know sometimes sometimes it can be informed by low confidence. So, you know, going back to Kimberly Wilson's definition of confidence being the brain's ability to predict a positive outcome. If you had a series of knocks, then of course your confidence is going to be low. So you are going to expect the worst. But there's a difference between that and the kind of gut, you know, oh God, it's gone, but I'm going to keep chasing it anyway. And I just wish that people were a little more transparent in that regard. Do you know what I mean? That they'd come back and sort of say, look, the budget's not quite there. Can you come down to this price? This is what we can afford. What can you do for that? Or, look, we're not, you know, it's not going to happen. We're looking at another direction. Thank you, but no thank you. Just something, some acknowledgement of your existence. Not a rant, not a big, you know, let's all get behind me and go after these clients with burning effigies or anything like that. But I just think it's a sign of the times. Everyone's under such financial pressure, pressure to crunch jobs down. Eve Warren being a lead creative from Love Creative in Manchester, big agency doing really, really cool work. We had a conversation a few episodes ago on the show about crazy demands being bundled into one job role now because, and again, we got deep into the reads of the reasons on that one. So go back and have a listen. But Just an observation. My last couple, you know, I'm very established now in my industry. I've been doing this 16 years as an illustrator. I've got agency representation. And the last 2 years, I've had consistently long, quiet spells, more so than I ever did, even when, you know, the credit crunch was happening back in 2008 when I started and everything. And I'm seeing this reflected by a lot of people. Now, I don't know what role AI has on it, but what I will say is I had a chat with Colin Kersley earlier in the week, really talented artist himself, who is one of a number of people who have been approached by clients to create work to train an algorithm so that they don't have to come back and use you. Can you believe that? It's a real thing. But what I will say is that when people are desperate and money's on the table and bills are to be paid, it makes for some interesting moral quandaries. So watch this space. It's something to be aware of, I think, and be on guard for. Anyway, before I get too deep too soon, big thank you to the founding sponsor of the show as ever. Been with the show since its very advent. We're a big reason for its creation. Illustration X, representing an amazingly talented roster of illustrators and animators worldwide. Check it out now, illustrationx.com, all those portfolios, great industry defenders too, working on IP around AI and all that stuff, and always working in conjunction with the likes of the Association of Illustrators, another former show sponsor, a Society of Artists Agents, and also supporting the show, the Ukrainian Institute. I'm getting behind these guys because they're doing really important work to connect the Ukrainian creative community with the rest of the world at a horrible time of war. So if you can help them, simple as a retweet, sharing a reel, shouting about some work that you like, go and have a look, ui.org.ua. Even better, maybe you commission them. I know people who've heard this show and come back to me and said, I'm chatting to the UI about commissioning some Ukrainian people, you know, to not only support a really talented creative community, but also just because they're awesome creatives. And it's not a sympathy vote, but if you can help people who are particularly in need, then you should. So go and have a look at those guys doing really important work. Hard to imagine what they're going through. Go back and listen to the episodes with Olya Protasova and my short story, The Hockney Soldier, which was written and read especially for this podcast. Because of a heartbreaking story, I'm not going to go into that right now, but go and listen to it for the whole story. So today we are talking about risk. Do you know why? Because I had a heart-to-heart with my kids on the nursery run this morning. I didn't have a plan for this week's podcast. And I thought, right, okay, it's been a string of big guest episodes. Last week was Stefan Sagmeister live from Off Festival. Before that, it was Radim Malenich. And these were two deep conversations, big conversations around creativity, about the human condition, about human needs. And between that and Athena Akkapis, who was on the show recently, let me think, what was she? episode 219, a professor in psychology from the University of Arizona State University. We talked about apocalypse psychology. And so this has been a lot of deep episodes. And I think that it speaks to something that I talked about in the episode with Stefan last week and with Radim, which is a sea change in psychology and awareness of human needs. Very interesting to be a part of that through this podcast. Very empowering, very exciting. So if you get the chance, go back and listen to any of those episodes. You can now watch. I've just launched the YouTube channel. So if you're a YouTuber, I'm starting to distill individual stories, quotes, pieces of advice from this show to put out there on the YouTube. So, you know, more bite-sized kind of welcome to the show type thing. So do have a look, do have a share, do have a subscribe if you're on YouTube. Trying to grow the platform, the creative condition. The listenership, I'll be honest, has always been modest compared to the gravity of guests that I managed to get for this show. Slightly annoying. So I'm really working hard to push and to grow. But really, this podcast and the book, The Creative Condition book, which is out now, get it at bentallenwriter.com/shop or on Amazon Kindle if you're an e-reader. They're a part of a bigger ecosystem, something that's growing. I'm going to move into coaching. I'm going to move into consultation, doing more talks for agencies, businesses, schools, education, individuals to try and elevate the understanding and embracing of creativity, because the world is in a precarious state with the climate crisis. That drops down into the AI revolution. Cost of living here in the UK is all linked, it's all interlinked, and I think that creativity is woven into all of the solutions we need to find for those problems. So this is becoming my cause. This is what I want to do, and this podcast is a part of that. So the moderate listenership doesn't kill me. It just pisses me off a little bit because it's been 7-8 years of hard work. And I know it's down to, you know, my lack of time to market because I'm juggling and I'm spinning too many plates and I'm illustrating and I'm writing fiction and I'm doing all sorts. So I get it. It's on me. But I want to change that. I want to turn it around and I need your help. One way you can help is dropping a little review on whichever platform you listen, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube. Little review, little comment. It all helps. All helps convince people who amble by and might fancy listening to this stuff. Anyway, risk. So I was on my way to nursery this morning and there were tears. And I'm a big believer that if something draws your attention and catches your interest a number of times in succession, you should follow that thread. There's just something in it. It's you're attuned to something that others might not be, or something that is right for you. And Risk appeared in the space of about an hour twice on my menu this morning, and I didn't have a plan for the podcast. So here I am talking about Risk. And the first incident was tears on the way to nursery. So my wife, Laura, was a little ill this morning, so she couldn't come on the nursery run, which we both do normally. And they were, you know, the kids love the mother. They like me, but they love the mother. No, it's all right. So they came along with me for nursery and there were tears for the first few minutes. And I, you know, we had a big heart to heart, and they're smart little kids. They're only four, but they're smart. So I'm explaining why it's important for them to go to school and go to nursery and socialise and meet kids and deal with adversity in as simpler terms as I could possibly put it, which is always a very educational experience. Other people in this industry who've got kids, you'll probably know what I'm talking about. You have to paraphrase and you have to distill and simplify things down. And it's a really valuable exercise for getting out of the way of your own bullshit, because sometimes we can convolute and we can overcomplicate very simple human truths. So I explained, look, you wouldn't have this mate, you wouldn't have that mate, you wouldn't have had that experience, you wouldn't have that little badge of honour were it not for having to spend time with other children, other adults, and just get away from us for a little while. I think it's really, really important. So, you know, that was my thinking. And I was trying to think of the best possible way to explain to them why healthy risk is important. And at that point, I struggled. I thought, they're four. They don't know what risk means. But one story that I did tell my little lad, so going back a little while, he had a bump and he fell over. They've got this little ship, this little boat. It's made out of wood and iron, and it's out in the playground. It's really cool, and they love getting in that, love playing that. It just fires their imagination. The kids, when I turn up to pick them up, I look through the fence, and they're on it, and there's storylines, and it's beautiful. But Frank fell on it when he was quite small, and he split his head open a little bit. I've still got a scar just above the eyebrow from a coffee table bump when I was a kid from charging around after a mate. And I said to him, look, do you remember you... when you fell over in the boat, and he's got a memory like I've got goldfish. Hang on, no, that's wrong. What am I talking about? He's got an awesome memory. Jeez, yeah, okay, it's morning, forgive me. I said, Do you remember when you fell over and bashed you? Yeah. I got my bravery better, didn't I? Yes, you did. You were a brave boy. You had to get sorted out by the staff before we could get there. I was in Manchester at the time, so I was out of town. I live in Salisbury now, it's the other end of the country. My wife Laura had to go and pick him up, she ran him to the hospital. The mother-in-law stepped in, took Martha to her house to look after her. And this was the first time they'd sort of been taken out of nursery prematurely. Frank ran to the hospital. Martha went with my mother-in-law to her granny's house. And we've always praised that bravery. And it's just stuck with them. And it's a little badge of honour. And I was trying to explain that he wouldn't have that story, that stripe, if it wasn't for the risk that he encountered in nursery, in the simplest possible terms. So after all this conversation, I get home and I sit down and I go to upload some new clips to the YouTube channel, the Creative Condition new YouTube channel. And I stumble across an interview on Stephen Bartlett's podcast with Jimmy Carr. And I like Jimmy Carr, and I like Stephen Bartlett. So, and he's talking about a crisis among young men at the moment, mental health, loneliness. So I have a look. very, very interesting. Highly recommend the conversation. It's really, really good. And they're talking about risk and the lack of healthy risk for young people today. And Jimmy Carr's talking about how the proxy for risk and the proxy for purpose, which a lot of young people can lack. I'm not saying, you know, this is a majority thing or anything like that, but it's about screens. It's about video gaming for long hours behind drawn curtains. It's about wanking off to porn in shady bedrooms and social media providing us with a vacuous, deceitful version of basic human needs, which is community and a space in which we are loved for who we are. It's very evolutionary. And Jimmy Carr highlights the way that Andrew Tate is kind of the 14-year-old imagining of what masculinity looks like. You know, just like Donald Trump is, as he puts it, the poor person's version of what a rich person looks like. And he talks about how young lads now, instead of learning to shave with their dads, they're learning on YouTube, and how damaging the disconnect of that bond is, you know, the lack of that bond. And it's absolutely heartbreaking, and he's absolutely right. And it got me thinking about risk and creativity, not just risk in terms of, you know, gambling on changing jobs. Could be that. That's one form of risk. Because if that's what you need to re-energize you and revitalize your creativity, then that's the right kind of risk. But I'm also talking about risk in mark making, risk in getting outside of a style that you've become known for that isn't getting your juices flowing like it might have done X amount of years ago. I know so many people stuck in that rut who always question their own creativity. Always. They come back and go, don't know if I love this anymore. Don't know if I love design. Don't know if I love illustration. Don't know if I'm creative anymore. You are creative. You do love design. You do love illustration. Or at the very least, you love the themes that switched you onto that in the first place. What you've lost sight of is a little bit of jeopardy, a little bit of risk, the thrill of the new and the chase and the unknown and the challenge of actual creativity. And it just got me thinking just how important risk is to that. So Jimmy Carr talks about Maslow being Abraham Maslow, who's an American psychologist, Maslow's pyramid of needs, which I believe was created in 1954. And it's a motivational theory in psychology comprising of a 5-tier model of human needs. And he talks about how we've inverted it. So the bottom tier is the basics: food, warmth, shelter, water. He's talking about how, you know, hundreds of years ago, we didn't have any reliability on the bottom tier. We didn't know where the next bit of shelter was coming from. We didn't know where the next meal was coming from. But what we did have worked out was the top part of the pyramid, which is belonging and community and knowing our place. And in this pyramid, it's called self-actualization. And that comprises of morality, creativity, spontaneity, acceptance, experience, purpose, meaning and inner potential. Right below it, you've got self-esteem, confidence, achievement, respect of others, the need to be a unique individual. In the middle, love and belonging, friendship, family, intimacy, sense of connection. Second bottom, safety and security, health, employment, property, family, social ability. Very base, fundamental, physiological needs, breathing, food, water, shelter, clothing, sleep. So he's talking about how that's been inverted. So we might not have had the physiological needs guaranteed. We had to work hard and fight for those. But what that fight and that battle brought about was a lot of self-actualization, morality, creativity, spontaneity, acceptance, experience, purpose, meaning and inner potential. Because we had to. We knew where we fit within social groups. And it's an evolutionary need to be loved for who we truly are. And that's because it gave us a greater chance of survival back then. These days, especially in the West, it's so commonplace for us to not even think about heating and shelter and food and water because everything's so ubiquitous. that we've lost sight of the self-actualization. That's been replaced by screen time and divided communities, people staring at screens, spending their time on TikTok, all of that bullshit. It's driven us apart. Then you've got the media, who are feeding us this idea that we should be scared of our neighbours, poor vulnerable people coming over in little boats from countries because they're fleeing war or famine. And you've got idiots going, oh, we can't get a place in the hospital or the schools. Hang on a minute. Are we going to blame that little rabble of people on a boat who are risking their children's lives to come across an ocean instead of turning around and looking at this fucking Tory government and going, sorry, how much did they spend on PPE that was never fit for purpose to line their mates' pockets from the public care? Do you think that could have something to do with it? Do you think maybe privatisation of our health service might have something to do with it? No? Sorry, I stand corrected. Forgive the side rant. It's a little bit annoying. But to Jimmy Carr's point, and what it's leading to is a younger generation of people who are really struggling in terms of that self-actualisation, self-esteem, love and belonging. Do you know what I mean? It's really, really interesting. So I just wanted to elaborate that and talk about risk. And I remember, so there's what that then got me thinking about was the kind of difference in generational parenting. So I remember my mate's stepdad. So there's a guy, Shane Gall, a really close friend of mine, who was mentioned in the Creative Condition book. If you read the book, you'll know, you'll be aware of him already. Got himself in bother a lot of times at school. He came from a single parent family. His mum raised him because his dad had left. And by the time I got to know Shane, he was well on his way to becoming a bit of a tech whiz. He taught himself because of his need to upgrade his own computers to run Football Manager. And that need drove him to work out how to upgrade second-hand computers that people were chucking out because he couldn't afford a new one, to a point where it would run Football Manager. And that's how he learned to build computers. He built our first family PC. He's a little tech whiz, and now he's a really cool web developer. Brilliantly talented in code and everything. But back then, you know, we were just becoming mates, and his stepdad, Duncan, was seeing us off at the door. He's like, where are you off today? And we were off to watch WWE in Hull. And or it might have been Sheffield, I forget which. I think it might have been Sheffield, actually. And so we were all, you know, we were buzzing. This was the Attitude Era for any wrestling fans. Really exciting time in wrestling. It was, you know, we were just going out to watch it. And I'm off to watch wrestling, I've told you. Fucking wrestling. He goes, go down Church Green and watch some proper fighting. And I always remember that. It cracked me up because Church Green in Keighley, where I'm from, was that the green that was between a triangle of pubs and takeaways. And you guarantee it, on a Friday, Saturday night, they'd be fighting on that green. And that just really cracked me up. And that, to me, was a beautiful illustration of that generation of parenting. Now, there are good and bad to that. And there's good and bad to the polar opposite, right? Which is what people call helicopter parenting. Hovering at all times. Oh, be careful, don't hurt yourself. Don't hang out with that kid. Oh, I don't want to go to that school. The, you know, little fuckers there. Both in their extreme, pretty bad, let's be honest. But with a modicum of each, like anything in life, balance, put it in the middle, and you've got something really important. Now, what I also found really interesting was Jimmy Carr and Steve Bartlett talking about religion, how both of them sort of got away from religion in their teens, but how in a sense they miss it. And the way that Jimmy Carr put it was, look, the people who completely dismiss any worth in religion, idiots. His view is not mine. I see where he's coming from. People who believe the Bible or whatever to be completely literal and live by it, idiots. Again, his words. His point was, again, let's just be in the middle and look at what's good. There are lots of good lessons for life in the teachings of any religion, right? And there's a wonderful community and ceremony that come together. And do you know what? You can't deny that. That goes back to the love and belonging part of the human needs pyramid, Maslow's pyramid. Friendship, family, intimacy, sense of connection, which also goes into the purpose of self-actualization. Do you know what? I'm not going to die anyone. I have religious friends. I think it's awesome. I love it. The stories they tell me, the belonging, the energy it gives them. Beautiful thing. Absolutely nothing wrong with it. Not going to get into the whole side of what the harnessing of religion for darker agendas does. That's a whole other conversation that I'm not qualified to have. But when you look at the human values of going to a community, and Jimmy Carr talks about the replacement of religion, and it could be anything. It could be football. It could be belonging to an environmental activist crowd. There's a lot that you can do with that model for living, right? So I was thinking about the ups and downs of the parenting extremes. And there's an old guy on my dog walk, an ex-army guy, and he's a really lovely, really tender. But when the dogs come running over and try and jump up, the discipline that comes out of him is hilarious. The dogs listen to him, even if they don't listen to their owners. And he said to me one morning when I was a new father, he said, look, he said, it's love and discipline. Remember that. Love and discipline. That's how you raise a decent human being. And he's absolutely right. Absolutely right. You have to steer, you have to guide, you have to love. And I think that a big part of loving a kid is letting them go, letting them do their thing, letting them play, letting them find out. And do you know what? It's hard to disagree, because any parent that gives a shit about their kid is going to worry about who they're with, what they're doing, what time they're coming home, all of that stuff. But a part of that act of love is to trust and to let them become human beings at the earliest possible opportunity, because that is how you become a resilient, independent, happy human. The whole thing with helicopter parenting is the stifling, the not letting the instincts come through, not letting people have fun and play. And, you know, this year's T-shirt at Off Festival said, fuck around and find out. And I thought that was magic. It's a mantra. It's an absolute mantra for life, for creativity. So I had my first instance of jeopardy for my daughter. And this was before Frank had bumped his head in nursery. Now, the reason that they go to the nursery 2 days a week, right? And part of the reason for that is that I think it's really, really important for them to get used to engaging with other adults, dealing with dickheads, making decisions without us there to guide them, and they can't rely on us. That's really, really vital. So we sent them, partly also because that we needed some headspace and we needed to work. So you have to sort of, that's self-discipline and love as well, right? Because if you don't have any time to think or be with your partner or be on your own, you can't be the best parent. It's as simple as that. It's always about the balance. So I remember going up there this nursery open day. So we all went up there. They gave us a brew. We all hovered around the playground, watched the kids doing their thing, talked to the staff, asked some questions, had a little snack. And I remember turning round, and there's a little kitchen in the corner, like a little life-size kitchen on wooden stilts. And Martha's little, she's 1.5 or something, maybe nearly 2 at the... No, actually, just past 2 at the time. And she comes out, blustering out like she does, and there's these 2 slightly older boys. And one of them roared in her face and gave her a bit of a jolt. And my back went up, and I had to really quickly check my inner chimp from going over and having a word or looking for the parent. And you know what? I was so proud of myself for that, because what happened was Martha didn't even acknowledge it. She didn't sell it at all. She just went, she looked at him, laughed and carried on. And the boys were just sort of stood there looking around, and then they sort of shrugged their shoulders and got on. And I thought, good lass, fucking good lass. Sorry for my profanity, I'm quite passionate about this. I loved that. She overcame a hurdle in her life. She built something there. She grew. She had to navigate a tiny bit of jeopardy. And if I'd gone steaming in, what would that have said to her? Oh, my dad's going to be there to get my back in these situations. And he'll tell the parents. They'll sort it out. That creates weakness. Because then she's going to think that I'm going to be there every time when I'm not. But no. She punched me in the chest the other night in bed. She was in like the pre-bed, fired up excitement phase. And basically she's had some kid pull her hair and pull her hair clip out and things like that since. And for this, again, the same thing. I've had to check my inner chimp and my protective self every single time. I've had to chat with Laura, my wife, and go, no, this is... So I both love and hate it, right? Because I hate that anyone's doing that to her. But I also love it because this is why I wanted her to go to a nursery. This is why I would never choose private school, because I want her to manage colourful and extreme humans. I want her to learn how to not just fit in and survive, but to thrive no matter how many characters are around. Because once you achieve that, once you get there, you're ready for the world. You can go out and find a career you want, the life you want, and you can earn it and thrive. That's what I want for my kids. So, you know, they come home and you get it. You have to sort of tease it out of them slowly. But some kid's been pulling her hair, pulling hair clips out. She's got a head of hair. If you've seen my hair, you'll know just how thick this mane is, and hers is that on steroids. And no, let's say it's that on Dax wax. And I'm going, fuck, do I text the mum? Do I go and tell the teacher? No, that's why she's at nursery. This is a learning curve, this is a lesson, every bit as important as maths and science and art and whatever else. So I'm teaching her to fight me off now, because I'm going, right, first of all, you say, friends don't do that. Can you not do that, please? I don't like it. I'm giving them a few phrases to deal with it. So they're practicing them, but they're also a bit sheepish. I'm going, right, plan B, you tell the teacher. But I told the teacher and they're really busy. They didn't do anything. Right, okay. Now you have license to give them a clip if they do it again. Now, some of you might disagree with me on that one, but if someone comes over to you in the street and pulls your hair clip out, what are you doing? What are you going to do? Would you feel wrong for giving him a smack? Probably not. I hope not. You shouldn't. So I'm teaching her. I'm going, you never, like, you know, I mean, from day dot, we never let them. If they whack each other, if they whack us, they know it. They get it. They know about it. It's an absolute no-no. We explain why it's wrong, why you don't hit people, why we never hit them. And then I'm going, but if someone is pulling at your hair, being a little twat to you, not in those words, by the way, here's what you do. You hold them off, you push their hands away, you give them a shove, you do what you need to do until somebody helps you out, okay? Because I don't want them getting bullied, I don't want any of that shit. So that's the deal. So now we've been practicing a little, you know, we've been rolling about on the carpet, I've been coming for a hair clip, and she's strong, and she's whacking me in the chest the other night right before my bed, going, Dad, have you seen how hard I am? And I can't remember telling her the word hard, but I'm like, this is hilarious. Anyway, this is a train of thought that is going somewhere, but you get what I'm coming from, right? There's a lesson for life in this. This doesn't change. The way that Jimmy Carr put it on this conversation, he said, what is a baby without a mother? What is a baby without a father? What is a baby without an auntie? It's nothing. It can't survive. It's dependent. We're all still babies. We need community. We need connection. We need healthy risk to grow. So I'm sat there then, my brain's going crazy, and I'm thinking about that in a creative context. I'm going, yes, we do. It never changes. The times when I dislike my job are the times when I enter complacency, when there's no challenges in my life, when there's no jeopardy, when there's no challenge to elevate myself to the next level according to my feelings and my own creative and personal desires. Right, it's why I write fiction when I probably should be illustrating. It's why I'm talking to you now when I probably should be illustrating. But the probably should is rarely the right solution, because we have to do this for ourselves. We have to do this for the magic. We have to take risks. So I thought, let's have a think about that, because my entire childhood was risk. It's like, I would not be a creative professional were it not for the freedom that I was afforded to do what it says in that off t-shirt, fuck around and find out. Readers of Champagne and Wax Crayons will know that the dedication in that book is thank you to my family for the freedom to play and make mistakes. Because that book wouldn't have existed were it not for that encouragement to follow my heart. My parents told me that you're going to be doing this for a lot of hours, whatever you choose to do. That's the world we live in. We live under capitalism. Choose wisely. Choose with your heart. I did that. So I got to bring a book out, and it was one of the biggest joys I've had in my life, seeing that book and holding it in my hands. And that dedication was an illustration of that. You know, that was born of fucking around and finding out via angry blog rants. I had to find out if they had any onward value, if anybody wanted to read with them, engage with them. Then I tried my hand at getting it out there as a book. And the dedication for the Creative Condition book, which has just come out, cheap plug, bentallenwriter.com/shop for your signed copies or Kindle for your ebook, is for those who did when they didn't have to. And it's a continuation of that mantra, because those people wouldn't have done things for me that they didn't have to. That could be an art director who's gone beyond the call of duty. It could be a parent who sacrificed something to make my life better. It could be my brother who posted me WWE VHS tapes to uni so that I could stay on top of that and maintain one of my biggest life passions. And the bond that that created between us when it was tough for us both, because we're really close. And when I first went to uni, I really felt that, and I imagine he did too. And that was beautiful. He was one of those people that did when he didn't have to. So were it not for my willingness to try and fail again, and then get stuck in again to make things work creatively, none of those people would have done things when they didn't have to, you know? They wanted to reward that in some way. Every tutor I've ever worked under, because I've sort of wanted it and gone for it, they've met me halfway. It's the same with clients. It's the same with art directors. It's the same with friends. And I do the same for them. I remember, you know, so my dad would always take me to parks with a football, and he'd have a kick around. But the second that he caught wind of a big game of football going on with a load of lads, he'd walk me over and go, right, go on, ask him if you can join in. And I'd be like, what? And he's like, but they're like 3 or 4 years older than me. My dad would go, go and ask him if you can join in. Look, it looks brilliant. Look at that big game and the nets and all that. And I'd be like, oh, yeah. But will they let me? Well, I don't know. Find out. Go and ask. And I did. And they'd always say, yeah. They never said no. They were always slightly rough around the edges. But that's the world I grew up in. And do you know what? All them kids who were slightly rough around the edges, you put an arm around the shoulder, you give them a football or a paintbrush or a pen, and they will fly to the moon. I guarantee you that. And it's one of society's biggest failings, is demonising the working class. But that's a conversation we're going to have soon with Professor Carl Chin, who's a historian, talking about the English working classes and creativity. Exciting episode coming up soon. But to go back to this idea of helicopter parenting, right? So it's the same thing with helicopter creativity. Always checking ourselves, always out-logicing ourselves, never taking those risks. I found a parenting coach called Megan Leahy in the States, and on her website she wrote this: we will struggle with how much freedom to give our children. What is hindering us? Neuroscientists and social scientists are only beginning to understand how the 24/7 news cycle does odd things to our parenting brains. And there's also the stress that carrying computers in our pockets all day brings to us in small and big ways. But the good news is that parents are starting to see what all this hovering is doing to our young children. We see the anxiety and neediness we create when we follow our children around. Parents are watching their children turn to screens and gaming as their primary forms of entertainment, which makes them restless and bored. Droves of parents report to me that their kids are unable to play alone or cannot make sense of their natural world. Being outside scares some children. They cannot create toys out of found objects, and it takes them a long time to find the imaginations that used to be readily available to them. Does that sound familiar? Because I see the parallels with that and creative professionals. Think about it. All right, let's replace children with creative professionals. Creative professionals turn to screens and gaming as their primary forms of entertainment, which makes them restless and bored. I know it. Droves of parents report to me that their creative professionals are unable to play alone and cannot make sense of the natural world. Being outside scares some creative professionals. They cannot create toys out of found objects. Let's replace toys with creative solutions. And it takes them a long time to find the imaginations that used to be readily available to them. It's so fucking true. Come and argue with me. Come on, you've felt it. That's the thing about joining the dots. I can see these parallels. We don't change. Creative professionals are the best version of children's if we allow ourselves to be. Anyway, she goes on to write, here's the deal. Play cannot be totally safe if it is true play. Again, same with making creative work. Let's replace it again. Play cannot be totally safe if it is true play, right? So, yeah, some element of danger or challenge, either physical or mental, is needed for children to feel that they are truly playing. Why is this? True play pushes children to their growing edge. There is a natural consequence when four-year-olds climb too high at a playground and must jump off. Think of all the systems at work. The brain is panicking a bit, but challenged, and so is their judgment. Oh, sorry, no, I missed a bit there. The brain is panicking a bit, but judging distance. The kid's balance and muscles are being challenged, so is their judgment. In the midst of all this, they are finding courage. Their eyes may dart around looking for you, but if they can't see you, they will find a way to get down. Their play turned into a true challenge, and this challenge has made them grow and brought about resilience and fun. It is fun to be scared and make it through to safety. The terror, the fear, the triumph. This is childhood. Let's go again. The terror, the fear, the triumph. This is creative professionalism. Is it not true? Come on. We don't want our children to get hurt, but playing and living comes with bumps and bruises, physically and emotionally. The elbow gets scraped. In my case, my daughter's hair clip gets pulled. The ankle gets turned. In my case, my son's head gets bumped on a small boat. The distance was too high, and the fear became too much, and there is value in all of that. Resilience in children, resilience in creative professionals grow when they make it through a tough spot while playing. But resilience also grows when they need help. That's why I collaborate with graphic designers. It is okay for a child to be challenged and need parental assistance. That's how they feel true boundaries. If parents are always creating false boundaries, the child doesn't learn or feel what is real or what is truly needed. This false sense of safety is more dangerous than most of the dangers you think await your child. Let's go again. The false sense of safety is more dangerous than most of the dangers you think await your creative professional. Sorry, I shouldn't find myself so funny. Because the mistakes that children make when they're older have greater ramifications. Because the mistakes that creative professionals make when they're older have greater... All right, I don't know if that one works so much, but you get the idea. You can go too far with that. Of course you can. Remember, balance, balance, balance. You don't want to be shoving them into a river and going, swim, you little fucker, swim! Because that's just cruelty. That's just being a dick. I got stuck in a tree. I mean, I was well high, and my mum had gone off with my little brother into a play park, and I remember it well. And I eventually got down, and I almost broke my knees, but my God, the lesson, I never went up that high again. And I also... You know, sort of, you learn from your mistakes, don't you? And that's how you grow in anything in life. So, of course, it works with creative professionals. Anyway, learning how to navigate social groups and get by and surviving and thriving, it feels really good. And this goes back to what I was talking about with Athena Actopus a few episodes ago. It was a zombie professor episode. We were talking about evolutionary mismatch, which is everything that Megan Leahy there talks about. You know, using the muscles, gauging the distance, the thrill of coming through the triumph. It goes back to Maslow's pyramid and human needs. And we've evolved to need those things to survive in social groups and live in a way that is sustainable for the planet. Right now, we're churning through so much electricity through AI, through blockchain, on screens all day, on TikTok. It's not only fucking up the planet, but it's fucking us up as human beings. And if we allow it to, it's knackering our creativity, because we're just becoming so complacent and so reliant on, you know, processes that we know and algorithms and everything else. You have to feel the fear to grow. Hector Ayuso, back on episode, I think it was 186, founder of Off Festival, become friends with Hector, and he's fantastic. I find him an intriguing character, and Hector suffered a lot of emotional physical abuse as a child. So through therapy and through his own growth as a human being, he talks about how he faces every fear and moves towards it. If something feels intimidating or uncomfortable, he does it because of the growth, and that's what he's learned to help heal, to help progress, to help be a better human. And I just think it's so true. So, you know, like I say, go away and hold the lens of Megan Leahy's thoughts on helicopter parenting over your creative practice. I guarantee you there will be ways that you improve and grow. It's very, very interesting. Risk is critical. Do you move towards situations that feel scary? I'm asking you now as an individual. It's not a judgmental question. It's not a rhetorical question. Do you? I don't know. Consciously, unconsciously. I do it a bit of both. So I've always roamed beyond just illustration. I'm curious, and I love the thrill of the chase, and I love the rush of being somewhere I shouldn't be, or getting to that next level. And that's what Jimmy Carr talks about. He talks about video gaming being a proxy for that for young men and young people. I think that's a really great comparison. My version of that was, for example, getting my first interview with Don Letts, which was accidental. I'd snuck in backstage with Danny Skerritt, who now DJs under Dirty Freud, does the music for this show, when we were running Quenched Music in Manchester. That was another thing that I created a vehicle to do work in music when I probably should have just been illustrating. We snuck into backstage at Unconvention, run by the lovely Jeff Thompson in Manchester. Unconvention is a superb music industry event all around creativity. And Don Letts was there. I didn't know Don Letts at the time. He's an iconic figure around punk. He's a filmmaker, musician, DJ, has a show on Six Music called Culture Clash Radio, which is tremendous. And Don is a real fiery character. You know, he speaks his mind. He's very innovative, very creative, very wise eye on the world. So Danny told me all this and told me why it was really cool that Don Letts was there. So I got chatting to Don and we had a really great conversation. And very much on the fly, not only should I not have been in this room, but I've gone, Don, would you mind if I use what we've just been talking about and write it up as an interview for our blog? And he's gone, knock yourself out, man. And I've gone, get in. I asked this because I knew that Don, you know, famously snuck into Bob Marley's hotel room to bag an interview with him, or so the myth goes. And he's that kind of character, so I knew he would appreciate the balls in me doing that. Luckily, it paid off. I illustrated Don. It was used front cover of Design Week for a feature of artists working in music and designers. And that was one of the biggest rushes of my career, and I earned that. And what that did was showed me that I could succeed in areas where I wasn't necessarily trained in, but that my personality enabled me to go. So that was one form of risk. Risk was sneaking into the room. Risk was sticking my neck out and asking Don if I could use it as an interview. Risk was sending it to Design Week and, you know, it might have been rejected. It might have just been ghosted. Took a risk, paid off, front cover. It was really exciting. My parents, I have to thank for part of that, because they would always make me go and ask for stuff. So I talked about my dad and making me go and ask to play football with the older kids. From an early age, they asked me if I wanted to buy my own bus ticket. I did. I, you know, remember to this day, clearly, getting on the bus and going, 25, please. 25p. Get a bus for 25p as a kid back then. Into town. I remember it really well because it scared me. And you remember these moments. They always did that. I was allowed to go and watch Leeds United from the age of 14 on my own with mates. That must have scared the shit out of my mum, because I knew she used to see like hooligans on telly and all that, and football. Lads, lads, lads. And, you know, fair play, props for them letting me do that. But I did it, and I bought a season ticket on my own at 15, and I loved it, and I made random mates with older guys there and stuff, and it was just empowering. And I grew up and I matured and I felt strong in the world. I felt like I could go out there and make the life I wanted. Massive learning curve. Obviously didn't know that's what was going on at the time. I just grew into it. I was a bit scared too, panicking about, will I find, you know, this was pre-internet, will I find where the match day bus goes from? Will I have the right change to get a ticket for the match day bus? It's all risk. And what I would encourage you guys to do is go out and live a life with a bit of risk. I'm not just talking about making a mess with your paints in your studio. I'm talking about take a risk. Go for a day out when you should be working and go see some museums. That's a risk. go and meet up with your mate and go to the cinema. Or do a job on the move when you just always work from your studio. These risks and testing yourself lead to amazing bursts of confidence and personal imagination and innovation. So, you know, here's another one. I've got one for you. So I've got a good friend of mine from back home. He's got a kid who's he's got a little boy who's a bit older than ours. I think he's about six or seven. And he told me a story, and we were talking about awkwardness. So kids will ask awkward questions sometimes that as adults, you know, we might try to cancel each other on Twitter over. So they'll ask, you know, we was at football one Saturday morning and my little boy Frank said, "Daddy, why has that man got brown skin?" I said, "Yeah, mate, it's got brown skin. We're all humans got different colour skins. Some people have got light brown skin, some people have got dark brown skin, some people have got really, I've got really pale skin, so have you, because we're both a little bit ginger." And he's like, "Oh, yeah. Cool. Job done, diffused, right? The guy wasn't in earshot. If he had been in earshot, the approach I would have taken would be to engage him in that conversation and go and have a chat and ask, you know, some questions. And that might feel terrifying to an adult because we get scared about treading on eggshells or upsetting or offending someone. And I think that's a really sad indictment of where culture's gone. And this friend of mine had a similar incident where they were on a food market, I forget where, and there was a man on one of the stalls and he was wearing clothing from a different culture. I can't remember exactly which it was, but this story stayed with me because I thought he handled it brilliantly. And the little lad said, "Daddy, why is that man dressed like that over there?" And my mate went, "I don't know, mate, I'll go and ask him." So he told me that his boy looks at him and goes, what do you mean? Like, "Go and ask him, go and have a chat with him." So the guy's looking over and smiling, and my friend comes over and says, "You know, my lad's got a question to ask you, is that all right?" So the guy goes, "Yeah." So he asks him, and I can't remember the ins and outs of it, but the guy loved it, explained why he was wearing the clothes, what it meant, who he was. And think about that. That's a risk, right, to go and do that, because you would worry about upsetting somebody or how they would take it. But I think that question is coming from a place of love and pure curiosity. So to go over and ask that question, that bloke has then engaged with him. So not only does he feel seen, the little boy feels seen, my mate is the conductor of that conversation, and between them, they have a tiny community, a disposable tiny community. But if that's in your locality, the next time you walk past that stall, you're going to smile and you're going to say hello, and maybe you're going to have a small talk about what you've been doing that morning. And this is how communities grow. This is how divides and misconceptions get broken down. Is it not? Misconceptions about both parts, because an adult version of that, you might freak and go, "Oh my God, why would you ask him about it? He's no different to us." And no, he's not. He's a human being. Of course he's not. But what he's wearing is slightly different. And is it not cool to go and find out what it means and where it came from? And that's just interesting, isn't it? That's exactly what Dawinda Bansal does with her work, with her big theatre installations and like projects like The Making of a South Asian Wedding. Beautiful, because it opens the floor to many forms of that conversation, and everybody leaves and everyone feels a bit better engaged, and people have their stupid media-fueled, fear-driven preconceptions of other people who are a little bit different broken down. It's amazing. So I've nicked that lesson now, and the same thing happened. My kids asked an old lady in the walked past an old lady in a wheelchair in the leisure center on the way to their gymnastics class one morning, "Oh, Daddy, why was that lady in a wheelchair?" "Don't know, mate, should we ask her?" We didn't in the end. She had to dash off. But next time I will very much go over and ask for the same reasons, because it smartens up the kids. They consider another person and why that might be the case. The person feels seen, because what's the alternative response, right? It's rushing them away and going, "Don't say that, come on, shh, 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 move on. And that poor person might pick up on the kids' acknowledgement of them being there, and then to see the parent rushing them away and not wanting to engage in conversation. For me, if I was that person, I would feel so much shittier with that scenario than if an innocent child came over and said, "Can I ask you why you're in a wheelchair?" I would like to think that person would be happy to, and they might say, "Well, because I'm poorly or because I had an accident. They might not want to talk about it particularly, but I still think there's great value to being seen, and that's risk taking. So those experiences, it's taught me as a parent and as an adult to think differently about otherness and difference in my society and in my world. And creatively, do you know what? That's amazing. That feels great because you consider, you have ideas, you think, you see things from different angles. I'm getting very ephemeral, very tangential with it now, so I'm going to wrap this up. But thank you for listening. I just think that there's a lot to learn here, and I encourage that approach in Creative Pros. Go and talk to people. Go to the illustration fair. Go and talk to the person whose work that you like. I get it. You might be sensitive. You might be introverted. But push yourself. It's a wonderful feeling. There are a lot of lovely people in this industry, and if someone's there putting themselves on the front line to sell their work, the chances are they'd love to talk about their work. And you go away feeling something that is evolutionary necessary for us, that community. It goes back to that evolutionary mismatch. It's not natural for us to be hovering on the outskirts and not going in and doing it. You have to push yourself to break past that, and I think it fuels creativity. And I get it. It's going to take longer for an introvert or a sensitive person. I'm a very highly sensitive person. So what I find is I never lack the confidence to do that. But what I do get is burnout and overwhelm to the point where I just want to then go and have some alone time and be on my own. I will push myself past that to a degree, but you also have to listen to the body. So again, with introverts, I can't comment on that because I'm not one. But I do think that there's great value to just taking the first step and taking the first risk and seeing if you can then take the next one. It's small steps, right? But it's all valuable. Anyway, there are a lot of factors to this, and I think COVID has had a lot to do with young kids and screen time and social reticence. I interviewed Abby Lucas, a friend of mine here in Salisbury, and she's a drama and English teacher at a school. And I used some of the, I interviewed her for the book, and here's part of what I wrote in the Creative Condition book about this. And she said, the state we're in at the moment, the way the kids are behaving is really worrying. She oozes the same concern that I've basically seen in every teacher that I've met. She goes on to say, COVID hasn't helped. Young people don't socialise properly anymore. They don't know how to interact in the way you'd expect kids 5 years ago to interact, she says. In terms of respect, speaking to adults and speaking to each other, they have no boundaries of politeness and niceness. It's a real problem. It's all up the country, not just in my school. It means we have so many kids who are really tough to teach, who just cannot sit in a class, listen and engage. A massive number of kids are getting sent out of multiple lessons each day, year 7 and 8. And so those aged between 11 and 15 are the most affected. Fight behaviour and mob mentality, it's scary. I think kids have lost resilience, and I think that's because of COVID. They were shut away and not exposed to new situations and people, so they've lost the ability to adapt. There's not much initiative. Again, replace kids with creative professionals, you know? Abby goes on to say, the majority of the kids at my school come from tumultuous home lives. That's where the arts need to come in. The space of drama enables them to direct all the energy to learn social skills. I love my drama lessons. I don't have a curriculum at the moment. I am completely free because nobody seems to care. I only teach 1 year group, and they only get it once every 2 weeks. It's not enough. The kids are so energized in that lesson, as am I. So I'm going to talk to Abby on an upcoming episode of the show, because this interview is too good not to use as a podcast. But we were in a busy pub, there was music, licensing issues, so I couldn't use it as a podcast. But the good thing is, time has passed. Abby has grown as a teacher. She's had a lot more observations. I know Abby better now. I think it's going to be a belter. So that's coming up. Anyway, going to wrap this up. Moving forward, I think for any of us, risk taking in both of our lives and our work is completely vital to enhance the way we see the world, to provoke juicy and valuable ideas that will help protect us against automation and AI, because that's another thing, isn't it? How do you outrun these machines that are just... Like my local Salisbury Gazette came through the post the other day, and there's a fucking AI St. George on horseback on the cover, clip-clopping past Salisbury fucking cathedral. It's ridiculous. It's like an epic digital painting style. And It's underneath it is a 10 quid meal deal for a local tandoori with shit typography. Do you know what I mean? And then above it, there's something about plans for the local station forecourt. And he's like, oh, God. Oh, you know, like, don't get me started on that. But we're going to need some strong legs to outrun AI. I really think it's going to fuck up a lot of careers. We're going to have to adapt. We're going to have to change. There's going to be big upsides, of course. But for now, you've got to take more risks. You've got to get creative. You've got to get the juices flowing. That's enough from me. Big thank you to the founder and supporter of the show, illustrationx.com. Go and check out their global range of illustration and animation portfolios. Thank you for those of you who bought the book so far. Wonderful feedback. Really, really happy. And the orders are steadily trickling. There's signed paperbacks left. And the website, bentallenwriter.com/shop, still working on getting it on Amazon. Going to be an audiobook coming up. Ebook is out now on Kindle. Let me know if you want any copies signing as gifts for people. We'll happily do that. That's the lovely thing about doing it through my own shop. Really proud of it as a body of work. Much, much stuff coming up for the Creative Condition beyond the book and the podcast. Now the YouTube, go and check that out. It's in the link on Instagram. Or just search the Creative Condition on YouTube. You'll find it, I think. If not, drop me a message. I'll send you a link. Cheers, guys. Thank you for listening. Big thank you to the Ukrainian Institute. UI.org.ua. Please do help those guys connect with their local creative community. Appreciate your time, guys. Have a good one. See you in a bit. Oh, and don't forget to review, rate, subscribe, and share, please. I'm up to 13 reviews on Spotify now, so thank you for those of you who've taken the time to do it. It really helps to endorse the show for new listeners, so thank you very much, guys. Take care. See you soon.